Did you miss me? I'm back. I'm Phil Gonzalez, and I'm back. I've been gone for a few weeks. I'm back. Don't worry about it. It's going to be a long episode because I missed the last couple of episodes. We got four short Berenstain Bears episodes to watch today. So before I say anything else and ruin this delightful atmosphere that I've helped create, let's get into it. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we're watching, as I said, up top, four episodes of the Berenstain Bears cartoon from 1985. Actually, this is from 1986 because we're into season two now. We've got four episodes, each one at about 11 minutes. So it's two episodes divided into four. I make this reference every single time, but each episode of the Berenstain Bears cartoon has two stories. However, those stories have been separated out from the leading episodes, from like their main bodies of those episodes, and have been distributed in many different ways across like VHS tapes and online and everything. So they're kind of separated from, I've had to reattach them to one another. Even the official Berenstain Bears YouTube site, which is where I got these videos from, doesn't have them in any real broadcast order. So I'm trying to replicate their broadcast order. And never, it doesn't matter. Never mind. What are we watching today? What are you watching with me? We are watching four shorts from season two. The first two are from October 11th, 1986, written by Stan and Jan Berenstain. We have Get Stage Fright, which is one of my favorite books because it's about the theater. We have by Roby Gorin. We have... You know what? I'm going to save the title of Roby Gorin's episode. We'll come back to that. Then from October 18th, 1986, we have Linda Wolverton. That's right. Beauty and the Beast herself. Linda Wolverton's The Great Honey Pipeline and Stan and Jan Berenstain's The Great Grizzly Comet. So Get Stage Fright, super secret name. The Great Honey Pipeline. The Great Grizzly Comet. All right, are you ready to go? I'm ready to go. You ready to feel the burn with the bears? Then let's do it. And we're back. Did you miss me? It's weird. Whenever I clap my hands like that, it causes a ringing in my head that lasts for like a good minute or so. Like I can still hear the ringing of the clap. And anyway, we're back. This is what it's called. This is the Berenstain Bears thing. We're talking about the Berenstain Bears episodes that I just watched. So let's get right into it because there's four of them. And we start off with a classic. We start off with the Berenstain Bears Get Stage Fright, which follows the book very closely. It adds a few things, downplays a few other things. So if you remember correctly, the book, Berenstain Bears Get Stage Fright, is about Sister getting cast as Rapunzel, not Rapunzel. Sister getting cast as the Miller's daughter in a production of Rumpelstiltskin, or Grizzly Stiltskin, as they call it. This isn't something she wanted to do. This isn't something she auditioned for. She was just really good at reading aloud in class. The teacher, Jane, announced that they were doing Grizzly Stiltskin as their school play and that Sister now had the lead. So she was pressed into playing the Miller's daughter in Grizzly Stiltskin. Brother gets cast as the wood person who finds out that Grizzly Stiltskin is the name of the goblin. And Cousin Fred gets cast as the imp himself. As far as I can tell, those are the only three roles in the play. It's the only three we certainly ever see. However, the play is still worthy of having multiple giant opera-sized sets built for it. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. In the book, we start off by finding that Sister really likes Teacher Jane because Teacher Jane does things that make learning fun, including like reading aloud instead of just reading a book to yourself, performing a book as a play, and that's how they get into the whole Grizzly Stiltskin thing. In the cartoon, we get a lot more with Cousin Fred and Brother Bear early on, sort of showing their disdain for Sister's love of Teacher Jane and them being befuddled as how learning can ever be fun or interesting, which is weird because A, Fred is a nerd and likes to learn, and B, Brother basically must have had the same teachers as Sister, so that's something they all would have experienced. Also, it doesn't ever come back up. Like, I can see where Stan and Jan, this is that whole thing where they had to sort of pad out the story a little bit, because otherwise Get Stage Fright isn't the most dramatically interesting play or story in the Berenstain Bears oeuvre. It's one of my favorites because it deals directly with theater and theater production, but it doesn't really have a whole lot of, like, it's not a really well-rounded book. So the way the plot goes in the book is that sister is very nervous about playing the lead in this play that she didn't audition for. Brother is very pompous about the fact that he has one line and he already memorized it. And sister sort of goes step by step, learning how to sort of accept the fact that this is something she's got to do, and, like, sort of learn her lines, get used to the space, so that by the time opening night comes, she's nervous, but she's not scared anymore. Brother, on the other hand, rehearses once, and then the night of the show forgets his line on stage, and sister has to prompt him, sort of teaching him a lesson in the process. And that's basically what happens in this, except they throw in some shenanigans by Papa. Papa apparently was a junior dramatist in his school days and believes he is still a great actor, and he's insisting this is going to be sister's first step to stardom. He gets, like, big ideas in his head, as Papa Bear does, and then he starts trying to coach her as an actor, and it only makes her more nervous. Now, I thought this was going to play a much bigger part in the end. I thought maybe they were going to, like, tie this as a through. It was mostly just padding, again, more sort of business for Papa to do, although he does get sister so worked up that if I interpreted the moment correctly, Mama does have to hit Papa in the face in order to get him to stop making sister nervous, stop acting like that. So I swear to God, she hits him in the face. She just slaps him in the face. So watch the episode if you wanted to. Otherwise, everything plays out pretty much the same way. We get less of a look behind the scenes of the theatrical production, though. They make a big deal about it in the book. You sort of see the backstage stuff. You see Teacher Jane backstage. You sort of see that all happening. There's none of that in this. Instead, we see a set that's so complex, it actually has walls on either side and like maybe a ceiling. But the only way to get off into the wings is by going through practical doors. So. And then we see that there's a second set of, like, the Miller's daughter's bedroom. I don't understand, like, who changed these sets, who designed and built them, who made them sturdy enough to, like, hold a working door, but also flip, like, portable enough that you could change an entire set, like, walls and all. Don't know who did it. Must have some kind of budget. Maybe it flies up like the Sunset Boulevard set. I don't know. But it all plays out the same way. Brother learns his lesson. Everyone has a good time. And it's nicely animated, written by Stan and Jan. Really liked that episode. But it's followed up by the episode whose title I did not reveal in the beginning of the introduction. That's right. It is Roby Gorin's The Berenstain Bears Go Bonkers Over Honkers. That's right. We finally get acknowledgement of honkers existing in the Berenstain Bears universe. And by honkers, I of course mean geese. Geese, which honk. Big Paw gets obsessed with finding company. He's lonely up there on top of Great Grizzly Mountain. Even though the cubs are his friends, he gets lonely all by himself. Raffish Ralph overhears this and decides to create a swindle. And what he sees is that Big Paw's obsessed with Big Paw. Okay, the cubs are trying to teach Big Paw how to play hopscotch. They need a pebble to play hopscotch. Big Paw smashes a boulder to create pebbles. The cubs have to go home, so Big Paw keeps creating pebbles. And along the way, he finds a pebble that's shiny and gold. And Raffish Ralph is like, Big Paw found gold. I need to get that gold away from him. So he's like, what do you want? He overhears Big Paw say he's lonely. He wants a pet. So Raffish Ralph's like, I have pets. I can sell you pets. Unfortunately, the only pets he has for sale are a camel, seemingly, and an elephant. I don't know why he just doesn't give, like, a more normal pet as an idea, but he gets caught up in his own game. Big Paw's all set to go down to Bear Town and go to the pet shop when he overhears geese honking. And he's like, what's with them honkers? And Raffish Ralph is like, hold on. He kidnaps four goslings, brings them to Big Paw, who adopts them as his pet, and they all love each other. Big Paw wants to go down into the town and show off his goslings. But when he gets down there with them, they create havoc. They walk through a sidewalk that's being dedicated in front of the Bearsonian Museum. They get Big Paw gets in trouble for it. He gets banished back to his mountain. The cubs are like, there's got to be something going on here. And they find out that Raffish Ralph sold them the geese. The mama goose finds out where, because they're like, we got to get these geese back to their mama. They're like, Big Paw, we got to get the geese back to their mama. He says, fine. The mama goose shows up. She sees Raffish Ralph and she attacks Raffish Ralph. Come to find out the gold wasn't real gold. It was fool's gold. And she attacks him and he falls off the mountain. It's a less sturdy bear would be dead. That's what I'm saying. It's a very Roby Gorin episode in that it's very much about the gags. It's very Saturday morning cartoon. Doesn't have a whole lot to do with Bear World, except that it does have the characters, but could be fairly interchangeable with other cartoons or even other Big Paw episodes. It's just Big Paw trusts Raffish Ralph for reasons we can't fathom, and the cubs help him out, I guess. Like, that's just kind of thing. Oh, and in the end, they're like, we're sorry you had to give your geese back. He's like, it's fine. I've got plenty of pets already. All the animals in the world belong to Big Paw. So there's that. We learned that lesson. Big Paw claims the land for himself, I guess. Why not? He could, probably won't, kill us all. Next up, we have Linda Wolverton's script to a barely existent story, which is The Great Honey Pipeline, the Baron St. Bear's Great Honey Pipeline, which is the first episode we ever have that has flashbacks to previous episodes. So in the past, when I covered the Wild Wild Honey saga, I remember covering this because the Wild Wild Honey saga is like the one real through line in this whole series. Like, there are beats in the story of the development of the relationship between Papa and Queen Nectar, the cub's relationship to Papa and his obsession with Wild Wild Honey, and Papa as a liar himself. So what happens is Papa is fretting over the fact that he has no Wild Wild Honey to his cubs, who are clearly bored with the story he's telling because they've heard this a million times. But Papa says that since he can't have Wild Wild Honey, he doesn't want any honey. And he's going to get rid of all of his honey. And the cubs are like, Papa, listen, you're being ridiculous. Like, this is ridiculous. We're tired of hearing about this. You've got so much honey. Who cares if you have Wild Wild Honey? It drove you crazy every time you've tried to get it. You've been stung. You had a drop and it didn't make you happy. So you give up the Wild Wild Honey. And he's like, you know what? You're right. I'm going to take the Wild Wild Honey label off the counter. I'm getting rid of the jar. I'm not going to even think about Wild Wild Honey anymore. And they're like, do you solemnly promise, Papa? Do you solemnly promise to give up the Wild Wild Honey? And Papa's like, yes, I promise. I give you my oath. No more pursuit of Wild Wild Honey. They go up to Mama to give her the good news. And Mama herself is like, okay, yeah, no. And they're like, aren't you happy that Papa has sworn off Wild Wild Honey? And she's like, yeah, we'll see how this goes. And I thought my prediction for the end of the episode was going to be that they thought Papa would have gone back to his old ways. And then they learned that they should trust Papa Bear. Not at all. That's not at all what the plot is. What the plot is that there is a pipeline being built. A natural gas pipeline is being built in Bear Country. And Papa wants to go hang out and watch the pipeline be built, which is very Papa behavior. He's like, there's nothing more exciting than watching a trench being dug. Meanwhile, the cubs go to visit Queen Nectar to give her the good news that Papa has sworn off the honey. But the bees eventually notice that the honey level in their honey storage chamber, which is under the tree, which is just like a holding tank of honey, is lowering, like being lowered. And they discover the honey is being siphoned out of the tank, and they don't know what's going on. So it's the squirrel who alerts them to the fact that there's business going on. The Joe the Beaver is the one who figures out where it's going, and also the neighborly skunk gets involved in this. So we have a lot of different animals from the various episodes who are now showing back up. It's the least mysterious mystery the Bear Detectives have ever had to solve. So the Bear Detectives, at the behest of Queen Nectar, the Bear Detectives show up, and Snuff finds out there's a trench that's been dug by the tree, which is fairly obvious because there's a literal trench leading off into the distance by the tree. They dig it up. They find out that the trench is hiding the pipeline from the natural gas line. So they follow the pipeline. Someone's siphoning off the honey. And lo and behold, it's just Papa. It's Papa Bear. Like, it's Papa Bear. He's literally siphoning off honey. He broke his word. He broke his promise. And again, I was still like, they're going to figure out it's not what it looks like. So what they do is the bees themselves fan their wings to create a vacuum that pulls the honey back out of wherever Papa Q Bear has it. Then the neighborly skunk blasts his skunk stink through the pipe so that when Papa opens the other end to get the honey out, it just blasts him in the face with skunk stink. Papa is incapacitated. He's not allowed in the house at the end. He has to sleep outside because he smells like skunk. And that's literally it. That's it. Papa, I guess, learned a lesson or something. He didn't. He literally lied to his children. He lied to his wife and didn't keep his promise. Like he solemnly swore he was not going to do this again. Broke his promise to them, broke his promise to the bees. And as I pointed out while watching the episode, they're like, what do we do? What do we do? And I'm like, just go confront Papa Bear. Like, you don't have to do a trick on him. At this point, he is just a thief. Like, now he's just stealing. He's stealing from a species that exists in the forest. He's stealing from royalty. Queen Nectar seems to be an actual queen. They can talk. Like, they're taught, they speak fluently with the cubs. So at this point, Papa is just a criminal. He is just like Raffish Ralph. He doesn't deserve to get skunk sprayed in his face. He deserves to spend a little time in the pokey. Because he's a crazy doing a bad thing. This is a bad thing he's doing. He's stealing the supplies. He's stealing like the stock of supplies from a people who literally just want to be left alone. So weird, Linda Wolverton. It's a weird screenplay or teleplay, Linda Wolverton. It's a weird one. That was October 18th, as they approached Halloween. Wasn't a Halloween episode. I do notice that Frank Welker is doing a lot of voices in these. I've noticed Frank Welker's voice quite a few times throughout. And The Great Grizzly Comet, the final episode we watched, is no exception. So this is another Raffish Ralph. This is another Weasel McGreed. We also have Actual Factual in this one. We have Farmer Ben in this one. We have a teleplay by Stan and Jan Berenstain. We have Papa. We have Mama. We have everyone. This is another like big gathering of characters. So this one's about Actual Factual discovers that the Great Grizzly Comet, which was discovered by Galileo Grizzly, is coming back towards Bear Country and will be visible soon in the night sky. And it only comes around once every 100 years. So everyone's pretty excited about this. Now, Papa gets the cubs all worked up, just like he did to Sister in the first episode. He gets the cubs all worked up saying that, like, if that comet's a little bit off course, if they don't predict it correctly, that comet could smash into Bear Country and we're goners. Like, it could level the land. And Mama again has to like shut him up. She's like, you're just scaring the cubs. It's not going to hit. It's going to be thousands and thousands of miles away. Papa's like, well, now this is a huge deal. And there's a lot of like people trying to make money off of the comet that's showing up. People are selling shirts. They're selling telescopes. They're getting excited. And the cubs are confused because Raffish Ralph doesn't seem to be doing anything to try to take advantage of the situation. He's not doing anything to swindle anyone. He's just like feeding the pigeons. Well, come to find out, he does have a swindle in the works, because Papa Q Bear gets stopped by a flying saucer, out of which a bunch of little green bears come and tell him that the comet, they're here to warn the population because the comet is on the way. So more and more people hear tell of these aliens who have landed and warned us that the comet is going to hit Bear Country and kill everyone. And so people start panicking. They have a big town hall meeting. They all decide to sell their houses. That's the point where Sister Bear and Brother Bear are like, okay, there's something going on here. Meanwhile, Big Paw's in town. He's bought himself some like a shirt and like a hat and stuff because he wants to celebrate the comet too. Yada yada yada. Big Paw ends up stopping the weasels and he smashes their flying saucer. And Grizzly's comet comes, and everyone's like, I can't believe we almost fell for Raffish Ralph's thing again. My thing is though, is this. The flying saucer shows up, and it is legit a flying saucer. It is a saucer. It looks like a spaceship. It is flying. It is levitating. It lands softly. This is the second time we've seen that the weasels can build something that flies that is shaped like a saucer. The first time was in the Sci-Fi Pizza. This is my Robin Williams in Flubber problem, which is in Robin Williams in the movie Flubber invents Flubber. He thinks it's going to make him a millionaire and get him like a grant or something. His assistant in that movie is a hovering, flying robot with artificial intelligence that helps him out. And the point is, why didn't he just make $1 million, $1 billion off of this flying technology he invented, off of this artificial intelligence he invented, off of this sentient robot he invented. Never even occurs to him. What does occur to him is to sell flubber in some way. And that's this. The Weasels have invented levitation technology. They've invented silent propulsion technology. They've invented a way for things to fly without needing downward thrust. Anti-gravity or something. There's a genius mind at work under the ground. Why don't they put that to use making some... If they're so set on taking things over, why not do it the way real people take things over, which is by becoming very rich off of other people's inventions and then making friends with the president? I don't know. Why don't the Weasels make friends with Mayor Honeypot? That's the first step in the right direction. Why are they only making friends with Raffish Ralph, a relatively powerless swindler? I don't know. In any case, Big Paw solves the problem the way the bears solve every problem, which is by smashing something into the ground. Smash, smash, smash. He smashes the flying saucer. At the very end, Big Paw's like, when's the next show? Because the comet goes overhead, and Big Paw's like, when's the next show? And Actual Factual's like, huh, in another 100 years. And Big Paw's like, Big Paw will wait. And I'm like, is he several hundred years old? Like, are we to believe, I'm willing to believe it, are we to believe that Big Paw is that old? Is he a cryptid in that sense as well? That he is an ancient being? Is he truly an old god of bear country? Do they truly live in the shadows of Mount Grizzly? Do the Standing Stones ever come back into play? I don't know. If you never listened to my show years and years ago, there's these monolithic Standing Stones on the way up to Mount Grizzly. These like prehistoric things that were built by the ancient ancestors of the bears. We don't know where they came from. It is part of the weird semi-Lovecraftian history of bear country that, Mike, if you ever want to give me a shot at writing a Berenstain Bears adventure, I've got the plot for this for Shadows in the Shadow of a Mount Grizzly sitting in my back pocket. All right. That was it. Four wonderful little episodes. What order would I rank them in? Probably my favorite one was probably Great Grizzly Comet, followed by Great Honey Pipeline, Stage Fright, and then Bonkers Over Honkers, even though they are all winners in my book. So thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for taking part in this. And thank you so much for being friends with me. And I'll see you all next time deep in bear country.